Your online feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder that BBN is a listener-supported Christian radio and internet ministry. To support us, click donations at bbnradio.org. That's donations at bbnradio.org.
From the studios of the Bible Broadcasting Network, we present Christian Classics, reading from a book that has influenced the lives of many people. Our narrator is Lynn Brooks.
Today we'll be reading chapter 12 from Rachel. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Had these words been blazoned in letters of fire on the lintel of the house on East 11th Street, they could not have scorched Rachel's heart more than already it was scorched, and torn by retrospection and anticipation, as she mounted the steep steps, passed dully through the doorway, and was engulfed within the home of Mrs. Deborah Kalinsky. Mercifully, the first few hours were spent alone. Max, after hastily depositing the suitcases inside the door, rushed off to his shop. Mrs. Kalinsky, stopping only long enough to give Rachel her first instructions, went off with Sarah in the same taxi which had brought them to a meeting of Hadassah. Jacob was at work, the children were at the Hebrew school. Grandmother Kalinsky, as usual, was sleeping in her kitchen rocker. Rachel would not disturb her for the world. How good to be asleep! Would that she, too, might have that sweet oblivion. As in an awful dream, she mounted the long stairs, 4 flights, in obedience to Mrs. Kalinsky's directions. She and Max were to share the top floor with Grandmother Kalinsky and the rats in the attic. A green skylight in the roof poured a weird light down upon the upper staircase as wearily Rachel climbed it. When at last she reached the top, exhausted, her way was almost blocked by her barrels and boxes, which congested the hallway outside the attic door. She entered her room, the front one. Her artistic soul writhed. In the dull light from the 2 northern windows facing the leaden sky, the outlines of the dark old-fashioned furniture stood out hideously. Sickly green hangings clashed violently with the frayed blue rug. The heavy bed was covered with a canopy and spread of purple satin. Ugly china ornaments cluttered the marble-topped dresser and table. A stuffed red velvet armchair, with the stuffing bursting copiously from the arms and seat, graced the center of the room. In one corner, a rickety washstand held a cracked pink basin and an orange water jug. The handle of the jug was broken off. Cheap chromos, each one dangling by a rusty wire at its own peculiar angle, adorned the walls, from which the dull tan paper was peeling off in many spots. A brass piano lamp with a frayed rose silk shade completed the scheme of the harmonious interior decoration. Oh, with a bitter moan, Rachel flung herself face downward on the bed to shut it all out. Oh, if only she could shut out all thinking, too. She tried to sleep, but her brain pounded too heavily. Also her heart. She tossed feverishly for an hour, then she dragged herself up slowly and turned on the lamp. It gave a trace of comfort, but only for a moment. Still her brain pounded. Oh, she must do something, anything, any activity, whatever was better than this thinking. She went into the hall and started tugging at the boxes. She got one half unpacked, placing the contents, her table linens, in a dresser drawer. Then she heard noisy voices below. Well, the children were coming in from school. Would they come upstairs, she wondered? Did they know that she was here? But suddenly the voices stopped. The children had run out. Everything was quiet again. Everything except the steady downpour of the rain upon the skylight and the scuttling of the rats. Oh, Rachel hated rats. She went into her room again and closed the door to shut out all of the distressing noises. She could not touch the boxes further. Later, perhaps, but not now. It was all too sickening. Once more she flung herself upon the bed, and this time she fell asleep. But it was a sleep without repose. Every kind of horror scuttled through her brain, much worse than the scuttling of the rats. Then the sleep became heavy, and she was oblivious to commotion going on downstairs. She woke to see Max bending over her. Clumsily, he tried to be comforting. "Did you have a good sleep, reckon? Come, dear, supper's ready. Mama sent me up to bring you down." Oh, no, Max. No, I don't want any supper, and I can't come down. Oh, Max, I can't. Max looked unhappy. "Do come, Ray. Mama said so. Now that we are here, dear, it is best that we should always do as Mama says. You know Mama, Raykin." Oh, yes, Raykin knew Mama well. But she was to know her better still. She bathed her tear-stained face and rearranged her hair, then, stoically, she followed Max downstairs. She steeled herself for what might be awaiting in the kitchen. It did not matter what. Nothing mattered now. What did await her was the unexpected. Reproach, scorn, cruelty, avoidance, Rachel was prepared for any one or all of these. But the actual staging of the drama swept her off her feet. As she entered the kitchen, perfectly poised to outward view, but tumultuous within, a startling sight met her bewildered gaze. The long table was spread in holiday array with the best china and adorned with flowers and candles. Around it were seated the entire Kalinsky family, sons, wives, and grandchildren. Mrs. Kalinsky's two dearest friends, Yetta Cash and Sophie Yasnik, the unfailing news reporters, were there as well, and, of course, Grandmother Kalinsky also. Mrs. Deborah, in the seat of authority and honor at the head of the table, was attired in her festive orange satin. Upon sight of Rachel, five or six of the children rose and ran forward screaming excitedly to greet her. "Annie Ray! Oh, Annie Ray!" Mrs. Kalinsky, beaming expansively, motioned Max and Rachel to the vacant chairs on either side of her. As they reached them, she embraced first Max and then Rachel with gushing effusiveness. Then she presented them to the assembled company as the guests of honor of the evening.
"Mein dear childrens, und mein little grandchildrens, und mein two dear friends, certainly it is tonight we all was wonderfully happy. It is tonight that mein darling son, mein Maxie, und mein darling little daughter Rachel, is came home to live mit uns."
"To live? For good?" Excited exclamations ran around the table. Rachel was speechless, but speech from her or from anyone else was quite unnecessary. Mrs. Kalinsky ably filled the gap.
"Ja, for good, for always. My darling little Rachel, she is not so strong, und it is too hard for her to keep house all alone yet. Also, the stairs by her flat is too steep for me to climb, und mein darling Rachel wants that Mama should be always with her. Und so we all have made it up together that Maxie and Rachel, they shall both come here. It is a beautiful surprise which I have keep all week for everyone."
Thus was explanation given, and thus was it accepted. Curious and excited cross-examination failed to shake it. The strange and sudden action was given further plausible defense.
"Mein Max is going for to make his business bigger, und he can save it so much money giving up his flat."
Rachel said nothing. There was nothing to be said, certainly at least not now. Even her present dumbness was kindly and reasonably explained by her solicitous mother-in-law.
"Oh, my dear little Rachel, she has had all day such a dreadful headache. All the packing and the morphing, it has been so very hard. We will excuse you, darling, to go right after supper back to bed yet."
It was a merciful release. Through the ordeal of that first awful meal, Rachel clutched eagerly at the hope of quick escape at its conclusion. Therefore, when the last nut was cracked and the last glass of tea was sipped, she fled. She did not even wait to speak with Ben and Esther or to heed the children flocking around her. Max would explain when she was gone. Back to the hideous room beside the attic with the rats she went, and there for a full week of feverish days and nights she stayed. Everyone was kind to her, Attractive trays were brought, and every attention possible was shown by different members of the household. Mrs. Kalinsky was the kindest of them all. Her devotion was as untiring as it was unctuous. Rachel's keen intuition perceived her tactics well. By her flattery and indulgence, she would cajole her daughter-in-law into meek submission, and she would allay from the other Kalinskys all possible suspicion regarding the true state of affairs between them. Sarah alone, outside of Max, was in Mrs. Kalinsky's confidence. For reasons of her own, she would never let anyone else know of the disgrace which had threatened their proud family honor. By disdainfully ignoring all reference to the painful subject of Rachel's recent treachery, its evil consequences could best be stayed, and Rachel brought back to paths of orthodoxy. Rachel was grateful for this respite. She felt too ill, too utterly heartbroken for open combat. But something warned her that the respite could not be enduring. Permanent peace between her and Mrs. Kalinsky was possible on only one condition: complete submergence of her personality in that of her dominating mother-in-law. Rachel's fearless, independent spirit never could submit to that, especially in the realm of faith, and the claims of Christ, as Violet Hamilton and the Saramoffs had presented them, had stirred her to the depths. She was in no position yet to defend them. Not even could she define clearly to her own heart and mind her answer to them. Complete silence regarding the entire subject was the necessary present program, and yet, even in spite of all that her interest in the Christian faith had thus far cost her, it gripped her thought tremendously. As she lay through the days of fever and prostration, with anguish of mind and heart, there seemed to persist an undercurrent of longing that Christ himself might be made real. Somehow she seemed to feel that were he actual and present, were he indeed the true Messiah, he could help and comfort even now in this dark hour. Later, when she was stronger, she would try to talk alone with Max. Perhaps Max would understand her, and together they might find him. Through the weary weeks and months that followed, Rachel gradually accepted the inevitable new order of existence. She fitted dumbly into her place in Mrs. Deborah Kalinsky's home, and the place was that of household Cinderella. Mrs. Kalinsky herself and the capable Sarah were constantly off upon their various Zionist committees, and the task of cooking and dishwashing, cleaning and scrubbing, even of the family washing, fell frequently to Rachel's unhappy lot. But she accepted it, as she accepted all else now, with utter apathy and deadness. If she were tired, it did not matter. If her head ached, that didn't matter either. It always ached. If Mrs. Kalinsky were ingratiating, or if beneath her sinuous caresses Rachel was conscious often of the adder's fangs, it was all the same. Her heart was dead, and nothing else was either here or there. Max she scarcely ever saw alone. Mrs. Kalinsky took good care of that. Rachel was not to be trusted. That fact she was never allowed to forget. Nor was Max allowed to either. She seldom saw her friends now. A little one had come to bless Ben and Esther's home, and Esther was held in the sweet captivity of motherhood. In the painful new surroundings of the house in East 11th Street, Rachel's other friends were ill at ease, and Rachel had no heart herself to visit. One friend supremely she longed for, Violet Hamilton, and the Saramoffs as well. All trace of them she feared was lost, for Violet would never venture another visit after that last disastrous one. And Rachel could not go to Rivington Street, for two good reasons. First, she dared not go, and second, the distance was too great from East 11th Street for Rachel in her present weakened condition to walk. And car fare she had none. Max was making his big money now, but not 5 cents even could Rachel call her own. With no household budget, Max was assured by his mother that Rachel had no need for money. Mrs. Kalinsky herself provided all her clothes and other personal requirements. And Rachel was too proud to ask anybody for a cent. Today on Christian Classics, we have been reading from Rachel by Agnes Scott Kent, published by the William B. Erdman's Publishing Company.
You have been listening to Christian Classics, narrated by Lynn Brooks. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.